If it's happening in the Coachella Valley, it's front and center now.
I love your show. I just love it.
He calls it as he sees it.
So my daughter turned me on to you, and you're awesome.
Live from the Palm Springs iHub.
You know, as a businessman, I spend my entire day, I work hard for the, you know, make money for my family. So I don't have the time to invest and to know what's going on, you know, and that's why I listen to your show, because you tell it exactly the way it is.
This is the Russ Betts Show on iHub Radio.
All right, welcome back to the Russ Betts Show. We got an hour in the bank. We're coming to you from beautiful downtown Palm Springs. It's a livelier Palm Springs now that some of the businesses have opened up, and man, it looked like a ghost town around here. It was lonely driving in. There was nobody. The streets were barren, and well, that's all coming back. And later in the show, we're going to talk about some of that. But and if you missed the first hour, we had a great conversation with Stephen Stewart, and I can't get into his resume. It's so diverse, but go give a listen to that, and you can do that. Later today at 4 o'clock, you get a rebroadcast of this show from 4 to 6 on iHubRadio.com. It couldn't be any easier than that. Just go to iHubRadio.com on your phone or whatever, your phone, your computer, wherever you want to listen, and it couldn't be any easier to find us. Well, right now, I have with me in the studio a very special guest named Chuck Parker. And Chuck, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Russ. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, and we're going to be talking about the Salton Sea, because you and I were talking over the weekend, and something came up, and I said, we got to get in here and let everybody know about this, right?
Right. Well, I've been working with a group called the Salton Sea Coalition for about 3 years now, and our main focus has been approaching the communities and the cities about the importance of bringing in ocean water from some source to refill the sea and cover all that dusty bottom, sea bottom up, to protect our health and our environment.
Okay, well, and I've been focused on that as well, and a lot of people have been focused, and your group has been successful. And you guys are a grassroots organization, right? This isn't a paid position for you. This is something that you do to make life better in the world, right?
Right. I'm retired, and we have in our group, we have retired folks. We have school teachers, nurses, just regular folks, and none of us are paid, and we don't have a budget. So everything we do is volunteer basis.
And I don't think people realize a lot of these efforts that get going are not backed by anybody other than people's conscience and the right thing to do.
Yes, and we found that a lot of community people are very concerned about the Salton Sea and have been for a long time, and frustrated at the lack of progress.
Well, they're going to get a whole lot more concerned about it at the rate that this thing is drying up, right? I mean, the water stopped flowing into the Salton Sea December of 2016. Do I have that right?
It was 2017 was the end of, they were adding water. They called it mitigation water. They were adding extra water to slow down the drying because after they started transferring water that was going into the sea to San Diego as part of a big legal settlement.
Okay, so but the lake, for everybody, it's been getting smaller and smaller, and up to 2017 it was getting smaller, slower. Now it's getting smaller, faster.
Yes, it's accelerating. The transfers of water to San Diego have went up, and they'll continue to be high until 2070, I believe.
Right, and that water wasn't coming from the Salton Sea. That was water from Colorado River that normally was going into the Salton Sea, but now no longer is going there and is going to San Diego.
Exactly.
All right. So we're trying to figure out what to do about that. And this thing's been studied to death since way back when the Army Corps of Engineers knew that something had to be done. This thing couldn't last forever.
Yes. The decision to transfer this water was made in 2003. And the state of California passed the Salton Sea Restoration Act, in which they took responsibility for fixing the problem. But nothing's been done really so far. They have spent many millions of dollars studying the problem. You're right.
Okay, so I was just on a webinar with you, one of these Zoom meetings where everybody's there present. It was a board. What board was that we were watching?
It's called the Engagement Committee. It's supposed to be it's part of the Salton Sea Management Program, which is run by the Department of California Natural Resources Agency. And the Engagements Committee's job is supposed to be to connect with the community and involve them in the development of projects, but that's not what they're doing.
Okay, so the projects would be, the goal of the whole project is to save this Salton Sea from blowing dust all over everybody, normally down to the Imperial Valley, but when the winds shift the other way, to keep it from rolling over the Coachella Valley and on up into Southern California, right?
Exactly. It'll be probably the biggest environmental disaster in the United States if we let it get out of hand, if we don't do something.
Well, so far we've all been watching it. I mean, every prediction has come true on how bad this is going to get. The only thing we haven't gotten to is the thing completely dried up, right?
Yes. And a big part of the problem is that I believe that the community has not been consulted or listened to, and so these officials from the state and certain selected people from the water districts and the county governments have been able to just talk this thing to death and procrastinate and put it off. And so it's only now that they're beginning to do some sort of rudimentary dust control down there.
All right, so what I heard was, tell me if I got this number right, approximately 30,000 acres comprise the entire area of the Salton Sea?
No, the Salton Sea is actually over 300 square miles. But their goal, the goal of the Salton Sea Management Plan, which is a 10-year plan that's supposed to run until 2028, is to, in one way or another, control the dust that's going to be exposed as the sea dries up. And their goal is to control, or what they call mitigate, 30,000 acres, which is a little less than half of what they predict will be exposed. So they predict that by 2028, 65,000 acres of area that was covered by water will be exposed, and as it dries, those particles will be moved by the wind, and they'll blow wherever the wind is blowing.
And so what are they going to cover it with? How are they planning to cover this?
The first thing they're doing is that what they call contour plowing, where they just take a big plow on certain little areas next to the sea and near communities, and they run a big plow and put furrows in there about 2 to 3 feet deep, and that's supposed to slow down the dust as the wind blows across it. That I don't think that's a very good method myself. Other methods would include maybe using some water to plant some salt-resistant plants, or put in some shallow areas of water where it can keep the dust down. But they haven't considered a lot of other methods that are better. Ultimately, I believe the only way to really control it is to bring in enough water to keep it covered.
So the idea of saving the sea at this point is really a misnomer, because it's already lost. What we're talking about is restoring the sea, because in the next 6 years, before any of this can get put in place and really start to have an effect, this thing's going to be drying up.
Yeah.
And before any mitigate, either they're going to either cover it over with, either they're going to put trenches or, are they putting gravel? Is that what I heard?
Well, there is, yes, part of it is going to be covered with gravel. A lot of these methods were borrowed from Owens Lake, which is up near the Sierras. It's where Los Angeles 100 years ago took the water from the Owens River in an aqueduct to provide water for this growing city. And as a result, Owens Lake, which was up there, dried up, and they had some huge dust storms for many years. And eventually, as a result of many lawsuits, the Metropolitan Water District of Los Angeles had to spend about $2 to $3 billion on these projects to control the dust. And one of them, there's a lot of area there that's covered by gravel. Another covered by plowing, like they're doing down here. Another with shallow wetlands and the planting of grasses.
Did it work up there?
Well, it worked for a little while, but then one year when it rained, the water flooded, and then it sort of destroyed some of those projects, and now they're going to have to go back and do them again. And personally, I think some of the people who do that work, some of the contractors who do that work, it's an ideal situation for them, because they're going to have a source of employment forever. I mean, it'll work for a while, then they have to come in and redo it, and they're going to have to keep spending money in order to keep the dust from blowing.
So well, once you put the gravel down, the dust doesn't start covering it over again. And when you got water introduced, a lake sometimes gets filled up again, and so that covers it back over with silt and dust, and now you get to put more gravel and more maintenance. And is that what's slowing this project down? Because it seems so simple to just bring the water in from the sea.
Yes. Well, it seems simple, but there's been a lot of resistance from one part and another. Part of the reason people tell me has been that, you know, there are so many different agencies that have jurisdiction over the land around the Salton Sea and over the water, that and they all have their own ideas about what they would like to see done. Another part of the problem is that some of them, like the Imperial Irrigation District, is not in any hurry because they're making over $120 million a year selling water to San Diego. They get the water free from the Colorado River. They sell it to the farmers down there for $21 an acre foot. They sell it to San Diego for $1,200 an acre foot. So, I mean, I personally think that's immoral, but, you know, so there's counter incentives at work as well.
All right, but if everybody agreed that we're going to actually start progress on bringing water from the Sea of Cortez, Gulf of California, whatever they call it, it's not an engineering impossibility. Sounds like it's a bureaucratic impossibility, but you just come up, what, pump up 200 feet and then it's all downhill from there?
Not even that. It's only from the Gulf of Cortez to the border. It's about 40 miles, and there's only a hill there about 40 feet high. So they only have to pump that water as it crosses the border up about 40 feet, which is a minimal distance. And then the 70-some miles from the border to the Salton Sea is all downhill because the Salton Sea is 235 feet below sea level. So they can even generate electricity as it falls.
All right, so here's what I know about government. My day job is as a council member in the city of Desert Hot Springs, so I understand some of this stuff when you're doing a project, is it all starts with the engineering study first. And sometimes we are, you know, taken aback by the cost of those engineering studies. I mean, if you want to put a crosswalk at a street, you have to do an engineering study first. If you want to put in a flood, anything you want to do, you got to do an engineering study. So it would seem, and you can't go from A to C, you've got to have that step B with engineering study. So why haven't they or have they contracted with any engineering firms? Have they put out a request for proposals for an engineering study yet? That's the first thing you do. For somebody come in and say, hi, here's what it's going to cost to do this study.
Well, they haven't done that, but the estimate we heard from from Bruce Wilcox when he was the head of the project was that any project to bring in water would need to have a preliminary engineering study that would cost between $1 and $2 million. They haven't done that yet.
Okay.
So
$1 and $2 million,
right,
to do the engineering study. That's all right. Sounds, I mean, it's a lot that goes involved. Somebody's putting their engineering license on the line. They got to get it right. They've got to study it.
Right.
Take into account everything. So has that been awarded?
No, they haven't even asked for it. What they've done is they've put another hoop that we have to go through in front of it. They've said they need an independent committee to evaluate the feasibility of importing water.
So we need to study the study.
Yeah, kind of.
We're going to go to break.
All right.
I'll get to my next question. We'll get back. This is Russ Betts with Chuck Parker. We're talking about the Salton Sea. This is going to get a little bit more passionate here because I'm getting disgusted at this. All right. We're back. This is Russ Betts on iHeartRadio.
Live from Palm Springs.
Hey, everyone, listen to this, please.
10 years ago, you know, this was a thriving, booming economy, but we're not going to that extent. This thing isn't a total crash.
I want to tell you, you got the radio voice, my friend.
This is the Russ Betts Show.
Wow, that's really honorable.
Now, here's Russ Betts on iHub Radio.
All right, welcome back to the Russ Betts Show. We're talking about the Salton Sea, and we were talking about a study to study bringing in what's called ocean water, salt water for the Salton Sea. Basically, the idea is to just restore it. But instead, we're off on every other tangent, and that doesn't seem to be getting any play.
Every time you ask the question, they say, yeah, yeah, we're looking at it. But I've got my guest here, Chuck Parker, who is expert in much of this, following it very closely for the past 3 years. So if I got that right, it's a study to do a study?
That's one way to put it. I think that's a good way to describe it. What we need is an engineering study, a real engineering study that would mean that we'd be ready to import water once we come up with the money and make the decisions.
All right, this is really easy.
Yeah.
Everybody in government knows what to do. This isn't, nobody's figuring this out for the first time. Hi, we want to look at bringing in seawater from the Salton Sea, or possibly there's another plan out there to bring it in from San Diego. All of it can work, we think. We've done this before. Canals aren't important. Step one, contract with an engineering firm, maybe two, to request proposals from them. Have we gotten to that step?
No. The Department of Natural Resources is saying that they want to hire an analyst to study whether it's feasible to even move to that step. I contend that if you look at the history of water in California, projects much more difficult have been done many times.
How long does that guy want to take to hire that analyst? That's what, takes 6 months to interview and hire?
Well, yeah, and the first time they asked for applications, nobody put in an application.
For the analyst position?
Yes, for the analyst position. That was supposed to be...
All right, so it's going to take them a year to hire an analyst.
Well, they hope to hire one, yeah. It's going to take the analyst. They say end of 2021, there'll be a report from the analyst. And they're putting all this off because they know that they don't legally have to even have a plan for the long-term solution of the Salton Sea until December 31st of 2022.
Has anybody told that agency that, guys, you know, you don't have a year or two to study this thing? I can remember, I was on CVAGS, Coachella Valley Association of Governments Environmental Energy and Environment Committee. We had a presentation on this. Paul Lewin, who was former Palm Springs council member, was still there. He says, guys, just bring the water in.
Yeah. Well, that's the consensus. All nine of the city councils in the Coachella Valley voted after careful consideration that ocean water import needs to be part of the solution for the sea.
Okay, so all those nine city council members, that's 45 people, all know what it takes to get this going. So now your group has to go back to them and say, hi, guys, you all voted for this, but they're still not doing it? Or how's this go? How's this work?
Well, that's the problem now. The people who have the power to do something are ignoring those resolutions.
Okay, so what we need to do is all the cities need to go back through this process and say, look, we told you we want this done. Get off the you-know-what. Get off your butts and get it done. And we don't need an analyst to study the analyst. It's $2 million, and in the scheme of things, that's not a lot of money. So do they have any engineering firms ready to do this study?
Well, there surely should be. There were 12 different proposals put in to import water. Those are big engineering firms that dedicated a lot of money to put these proposals together. There's one company that's even negotiating with Mexico, and they're in the final stages of negotiating an agreement where Mexico will agree to allow them to bring water as far as the border. So all we need is some initiative on this side to make it happen. So I'm sure there are a lot of companies out there, if we can define the problem correctly. Like you said, it's not rocket science. It's been done many times.
So what I see happening is this thing going along down the road and getting further and further to crisis. And I think if you talk to groups like the Sierra Club, they're going to tell you it's already in crisis because the wildlife's got to be impacted by now, right?
Well, it's been destroyed, really. I mean, under the aegis of the Department of Fish and Wildlife, who actually is running the show out there, all the fish are practically dead because the salinity, as the thing dries up, it becomes saltier. Right now, it's twice as salty as the ocean. And the last fish that lived in there, the tilapia, are only a few are surviving near where a little water runs in. So once those fish died, the big birds, the cranes, and all the beautiful pelicans and things that everybody loved to watch, they're gone because there's nothing to eat. So the complexion of what's alive down there has completely changed.
So I got this vision for this thing of, not cut it down to a third of its size or, put in these little areas, or these ponds or, bulldoze little, berms. My idea is bring in that water and bring it back
to full, I mean, there's people at the marinas or wherever else, you see these pictures where you see a boat dock that's in nothing but old lake bed. And, you know, one day somebody goes back and says, wow, let's dust off this building, let's build new, let's put these boat docks in, but we're not getting there, right?
No, but we need to, you're right. It can be done, and it will be a great benefit to the valley and beyond.
All right. As usual, we're out of time. We could carry this conversation on a long time, but heck, it's been going on for, what, 30, 40 years already?
Yes.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. Chuck, thanks for coming in. I really appreciate having you here.
Well, thank you, Russ.
And, you know, let me know. I'm on one of those city councils. If you get a letter that says we need another resolution, send it to it. I'll move it through our city council. And every other council member in earshot of my voice, you need to do the same thing. We need to help people get off of their butts, at least get the engineering study done, right?
Right. Right on.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you.
And thanks for all the time and effort your group puts in. All right. This is Russ Betts on iHub Radio, and we're back with more. That's what we do here. All right.
Thank you for educating so many of us. I think you're the best.
We are the people in your neighborhood.
With great power comes great responsibility.
This is the Russ Betts Show.
Wow, where has the time gone? I tell you, we just blew through those first hour and a half of the show. We had some great guests on, Stephen Stewart, and we just finished up with Chuck Parker. Chuck's working on the Salt and Sea issue, and I just about blew a gasket wondering what the heck's taken so long with this engineering study to bring the seawater to restore the Salton Sea, bring it back to its full glory. Boating, recreation, maybe some fish reintroduced. They're all dying. Something for the large cranes and the birds. I'm not talking about construction cranes, I'm talking about the birds. It's quickly turning into a disaster. And nine cities across the Coachella Valley all signed on resolutions saying, study, bringing in, not study, do the engineering study that will tell you what you need to do to bring in this, to start the construction bids on a to bring the salt water into the sea and restore it. And for some reason, that idea, there's some reluctance to that, and I don't know what it is. But every time I see a good idea that's not going somewhere, I just shake my head and wonder what the heck's wrong with government that it can't move in a direction. And this is not rocket science. Every council member knows, anybody who's involved in any city government knows how this process works. And it's a vote to conduct an engineering study that will tell you how you're going to construct it. Then you put stuff out to bid, and then you select from the engineering company that's going to get it. I mean, look at the 60 freeway going through the Badlands, what they're doing. I mean, they're removing mountains, adding lanes, and doing it while they're keeping it open. And you got a great engineering firm there, a construction firm doing the work. It ain't any hard problem to dig a trench or to put a pipeline in. It's not like it's something new. There's something else in the way of this. There's something else stopping this program, this progress from happening. All right. Well, we're going to get on to something else. Did you see what happened over the weekend with the Trump rally? And I'm not going to cover the rally. I'm not going to get into all that politics because there's way too many of you that are triggered on both sides of that equation. I cannot believe. Man, you enter in a conversation with somebody, either they love Trump or they hate him. And I figured out a great way to deal with it. Yeah, great. You're right. I mean, people are triggered. But what I do want to talk about is what happened at this rally. And there's all kinds of speculation as to why there wasn't this large turnout. The organizers, the people putting it on, the Trump campaign thought, oh my God, we've got millions and millions of people who want to attend this event. This is fabulous. This is going to be huge. Well, it turns out that Twitter users and teens on something called TikTok and K-pop fans sabotaged Trump's Tulsa rally, and it left seats empty. What they did is they reserved thousands of tickets with no intention of showing up. And, you know, hey, how's the ticket sales going? Oh, my gosh, you can't believe the number of people that are coming here. Is that big? You mean we're going to have that big of a of an overflow area? All right, well, tell you what, get a stage there so at least they're not sitting there, and I'll come out and we'll have the president and the vice president, a couple speakers come out there, and so at least these people that are outside in this big overflow area can have some of this experience. And then we'll go in and do the regular deal inside for the thousands of people who will pack this big arena. And, well, what size arena? We better get the biggest one in. Well, it turns out all these teens decided just to go online. I'm reading from the Daily Mail. It's a few other places that came up. And, of course, you know, while everybody's trying to figure out what happened, you know, the news outlets are out there going, oh, well, maybe he's lost his support. We don't know if he has or not based on this, but, you know, you get all this wild speculation. Meanwhile, there's a whole bunch of teens sitting there, one of them holding 800 tickets. Say, well, I know what happened. I got 800 tickets. Well, I just reserved them. So campaigning goes off on another course now. If you're going to have an event, and event planning's a big deal, you know, these teens just thwarted it. So, of course, U.S. Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez praised the Zoomers and the K-pop allies that were involved in reserving the tickets. And it was intended to be one of the largest indoor gatherings in the world during the coronavirus pandemic. And Trump's campaign had declared that it received over 1 million ticket requests. Well, it did receive those. That was the truth. But they couldn't fill a 19-seat Oklahoma center. And so they scrapped the plan. You know, at some point in time, you know, they're saying, well, what's going on? Where is everybody? They're not showing up. We sold all these tickets. Something's going on. And, well, now they find out. And, you know, I'm sure there was some speculation that because protesters were out front and you know, hey, who's going to go risk it with all the violence that's gone on? And anyhow, well, there you go. That one didn't work out so well, and you're going to have to, when you start planning events now, you're going to have to figure out, okay, now what do we do? If we're going to do another one of these, how do we prevent this from happening again? I think they got it dialed in with the people who used to show up, get tickets to show up to disrupt the event. They got that figured out pretty well. They learned how to deal with that disruption. What I want to know is, why is there so much effort to disrupt political participation? You know, what, in 2016, it was, well, let's prevent everybody from going and hearing this by blocking the road so they can't get there. And I'm thinking, well, where did that enter into the political equation where my ability to go listen to a candidate and see what they have to say is physically blocked by somebody who's telling me I can't hear that conversation? And I don't care which candidate it is. I mean, is that what campaigning is going to come down to now? Is that what national elections are going to be? If Joe Biden holds a rally, is the other side now going to go, okay, great, let's go do the same tactics? Let's go, and so that nobody gets to hear anybody? They did block a gate for a little while there at the Tulsa thing. I was watching the live feed on it. There's a whole bunch of people out there with cameras just walking around filming it. And, you know, you can see what's going on. But anyhow, all right, well, that's enough of that. That's something surprising. Normal airfare to China, for example, was surprisingly low, as low as $550 LA to Shanghai, which is probably as cheap as anywhere else you could fly. And you would think during these times when people are concerned about flying that the planes would be empty and the prices would be almost free. Well, think again. Economy seats have sold out for business class fares. What you used to pay for an economy seat, now you can't get for the price of a business class fare. The average ticket prices have risen by 150% on March 15th, and it's gotten only worse since then. There's been a surge in bookings. And prices due to insufficient supply. Remember all the airlines grounded their planes? Well, that drove prices way, way high. A guy here is quoted in this article is Mason Kwan. He's a student from Beijing at Midwestern U.S. College. He paid $4,787 for an economy class ticket on Air China. Remember, that used to be $550. And my wife came out. She's watching her Chinese. It's Chinese. She's watching her Chinese news shows. You know they have Chinese news shows? We all sit around and watch the English news shows. Well, they got Chinese news shows showing the same thing, same pictures. You would, she says, wow, somebody just paid $10,000 to get back. They bought a ticket from somebody else. Apparently now there's a market in tickets. And if you look at the numbers from the TSA, they have a checkpoint travel numbers. They see everybody coming and going, so they keep track of it. And on June 18th, the number of travelers weekday was 2,728,000. Oh, wait a minute, what is this? That was 1 year ago, was 2,728,000. And the same period was 576,000. So it's still way down. It dropped as low as, wow, 100, and on May 16th, 193,340 people were all that flew on May 16th. And a year ago, the same numbers was 2 million. Well, the numbers are creeping back up. And because they grounded so many planes and those numbers creeping back up, well, supply and demand. Well, the airline industry is not booming. I'm looking at an article here on The Hill. And but they're sitting there, they're making the case that things are coming back. So we'll see what happens. It's you know, there's a lot riding on that. A lot of jobs riding on that airline industry. You talk about local jobs. People go down and, you know, service the planes, clean them, refuel them. The people who arrange the car rentals for the cars that were normally rented that are right now still sitting around the airport. I see it's getting a little busier. We're positioned right here. We're at the airport here in our studio, and so I see the rental car lots. And it was really, really dead before, and I'm starting to see a little bit of activity now. What you always saw on the local streets was a guy going and getting the cars and bringing them back. I mean, there's a process in the car rental where they have the storage lots, and they need a certain type of car, and they'll go and somebody run and get it and bring it to the rental car agency where somebody picks it up. So that's it. All right. Have any of you ever wanted to put in a public records request? I mean, this is going to be, all right, we're in class time here. This is Russ Betts, city council member, talking to you about how you do certain stuff. And one of the things you might want to do, I always have people ask me, says, well, how do I get that piece of information? Could I get that information? Is that available? How do I get a look at the budget? Well, a lot of it's available online, but if there's something you want to see, like an email that's been written or an internal document, all of that is available for your view. So there's an organization out there, a great organization. It's called Californians Aware, the Center for Public Forum Rights. And they got a publication out here, the top 10 points to remember about making a California Public Records Act request. Now, I'm not going to go through all that because it could get a little bit of dry, but I need you to be aware of this, that when you call and ask your council member, hi, is that available? Your council member's thinking, yes, of course it is. It's ingrained into all of our heads. Every single document that is written, every email that's written between council members or otherwise is available for you. Every city document. Now, there's a few exceptions on personnel matters and details like that, but otherwise, that's all available to you. So check out Californians Aware. You can just look it up, CalAwares. If you go do a search on CalAware, top 10 points to remember about making a public records request. That'll get you. I had intended to read through this, but I'm looking at this. I'm going, I might put you to sleep on this one. So this is your homework assignment. Go have a look. Okay? It's interesting stuff. Well, if you're into government, I mean, that's why you're listening to this show. You're supposed to want to learn this stuff, right? I mean, that's what you're here for. That's what I'm here for. All right, hey, we got some exciting news here at iHub Radio. Before I run out of time, I want to make sure I get to this, is that we're going to a live, we're going to a new format, which is podcasts. It's just going to make it a whole lot easier for you to listen to these shows. And for my regular listeners who tune in at this time of the day to hear me, well, we're going to be ending the live episodes of the programming. And we're going to be going to the much more accessible, listen when you want to, podcast format. And so you may hear a couple episodes a week rather than just the one I do. So we're looking forward to this one. You'll find us on Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn apps, all the usual places. But like I say, just go to iHubRadio.com. You'll still be able to find us there. It's exciting. It's a great world we're living in here where the communication options are phenomenal. And here we are at iHub Radio making some changes that'll Now we're going to be a whole lot more accessible to a whole lot more people on a whole lot more time. So good, interesting stuff coming along. All right, this is Russ Betts on iHub Radio. Got more to come here in beautiful downtown Palm Springs. We're back.
Read about it tomorrow. See you tonight. Hear it all day today. If it's happening in the Coachella Valley, it's front and center now on iHub Radio.
No way. That's incredible.
Now, here's Russ Betts.
All right. Well, as usual, there's not enough time to get to everything we got for you, but don't worry. We're going to have podcasts that you can listen to. I have all the time I need to put out even more interesting details, but right now what I'm going to say is don't do it. Don't take those bribes. The former Calexico City Council members, or a couple of them, well, they ran into some FBI agents who, said, hey, we'd kind of like some favors and we're willing to pay for it. And so who do you got? David Romero and Bruno Suarez Soto entered their pleas before U.S. Magistrate Judge Bernard G. Scomel. And they got a sentencing hearing on September 4th. And they're allowed to remain free on $10,000 bail. But apparently, according to this article, they accepted $35,000 in cash bribes to help a prospective cannabis dispensary get open and to circumvent the normal process to get opened by, you know, greasing the wheels to do so, and then also suppressing other people's applications. And, it turned out the people they were talking to were FBI agents. So I don't think there's too many people out there that would even contemplate doing this. It's always sad to see that there are crooks out there, or alleged crooks. Let me use the word alleged. I don't want to get us into trouble. They haven't been tried and convicted yet. But, Romero resigned from office on June 8th, so they did enter pleas. Maybe, I guess, we'll see. Anyhow, that's enough of that one. Always hate to see that stuff going on. And this is definitely from one of the, this is from a stack of not enough time to get to, but I want to talk about it a little bit here. Anaheim City Council majority members have decided they don't need to consider policy proposals from the minority more than once in a six-month period. And if you looked at the headline article on this editorial opinion in the, the Voice of Orange County publication, they're making the case that somehow the ACLU needs to get involved and the minorities' rights are being thwarted. It's basically a 3-2 council or whatever it happens to be, and that there are times when you can limit the debate of the minority, and that's all normal. There's times when you can't. And they're trying to make the case because, well, these guys apparently want to keep reintroducing the same agenda item over and over and over again. And the council majority has decided, you know what? You had your shot at that. It was voted down. And so you can't bring it back until there's something substantially new and different to bring back. Now, if you're in the minority, you say, well, that's terrible. I can't believe that the majority would shut us down like that. But you had your day. You lost. You can't forever tie up the legislative process to bring endlessly, time and time again, every meeting, the same agenda item, or the same agenda item just tweaked a little bit differently. And there is nobody, no stronger advocates for the rights of minority interests, and I'm not talking about racial minorities, I'm talking about majority versus majority. The minority on a council has got their, you must respect their ability to bring initiatives forward. And I'm always amazed at how many people who think that because they're in the majority, they can just stifle everything and shut it down. And that doesn't happen that way. We've covered that on this show before. So, anyhow, in Anaheim City Council, they're going through this turmoil right now. And they got this lawyer who apparently wanted to make herself famous and get some airtime, who's sitting there saying that she thinks that their rights are being violated and maybe we need to go talk to the ACLU. It was a 4-3 council, so they got seven members on their council. and it was a 4-3 vote that shut him down. So, sorry, it ain't the way it works. You don't have endless times as a minority to put forward your ideas. You only have, you know, once, twice, whatever. You know, just you can't use it to tie up the legislative process. That's not a tool of the minority and a council to say we're not getting our way, so nobody gets their way. That's not the way the process works. All right, what else we got here? You know, back in May, you had a whole bunch of people saying that the unemployment rate could be north of 20% in May, with possible double digits still in November. And that was even coming out of the senior White House economic advisor, who forecasted that May and June would be very, very terrible unemployment numbers. His name's Kevin Hastert. Kevin Hassett. And, well, that was then. And then, well, that was last month. And then it came this month. May's unemployment numbers were shocking, says the article out of CNN. Here's how everyone got it so wrong. And what was shocking is that, you know, economists were expecting the jobs report to show May was just yet another horrendous month for workers. But it turns out that the reality is that instead of unemployment being sky high, it suddenly fell in May as employers added 2.5 million jobs. It was the best month, as according to CNN, it was the best month for job growth since the Bureau of Labor Statistics started tracking data in 1939. And unemployment increased for across all social and economic demographics. The article goes on to ask how economists have got it so wrong, and they're saying, well, just because we're in uncharted territory. I don't know. The economists ever get it right? Anyhow, the recovery may have started way earlier than we thought, says CNN. Jobless claims did not fit with the picture that everything would be a disaster. We know that that picture was wrong. So basically, in a nutshell, in other words, we're all broke again because we're all back to work. You know, the extra money that was added to the unemployment, well, that's gone. Well, as soon as you go back to work, that extra $600 a week. So look for the economy to come to a screeching halt. We're all back to work, not making enough money. That's the bottom line on that one. All right, what else we got here? Not a lot of time to cover much anything except... let's see, you got a $11.7 million scheme for addiction treatment fraud scheme. You know, they have all these people setting up to help people get over their addictions, which is a good thing. Except apparently this company was running out of clients in California, so they started shopping the entire rest of the nation to find patients. Put out ads all over the place and said, well, come on in. The problem was the program was only for Californians, and you had to be a Californian. Well, they found 441 patients from all over the country and sent into 19 different traffic centers, and they went and billed for these people. And what they did was they just started paying people for their addresses. Hi, can we say this person lived here? Well, and they paid them $300 to use their address. That cost the government $11.7 billion. No word that the people actually got treated. All right, you know, until we hear you on a podcast, which will be soon, we're done for another 2 hours here in beautiful downtown Palm Springs in the iHub Radio Studios. Always good to have you with us. Looking forward to having you with us for many, many more shows to come. And, well, that's it. We're done for the day on the Russ Betts Show, and lots more coming ahead.